Welcome to the Siemens Digital Industry Software Energy Podcast. My name is Brendan Conley, and today we have some great topics in the headlines to explore around energy security. Joining us today is John Nixon, the Global Lead for Strategy in Energy, Chemicals, and Infrastructure, or ECI for short. We also have John Lusty, the Portfolio Development Executive for Canada in ECI. Let's dive right in. We've seen in the news that Texas, a leader in renewable energy generation, has legislation that might slow continued investment. What are some of your thoughts on this?
Well, Mr. Lusty, I'm here in Texas, so this is in my backyard. What you're referring to, Brendan, is State Senate Bill 624. It passed by a pretty strong vote, something like 21-9, I think. So there's some strength behind that bill. It really comes in response to some events that occurred in Texas. A short while ago, there was a tremendous freeze that kind of came through the state. And really, for the most part, the entire state was shut down, to include the Houston Ship Channel, which is in my backyard. The Houston Ship Channel is a tremendous port for trade. And also within the Houston Ship Channel is a lot of refining and chemicals production. And back in 2021, the state consumed roughly about 436 terawatt hours, right? So that gives you a sense of the volume of power that just we consume on an annual basis. And here for about a week of that year, boom, we had nothing for power. So a tremendous hit for the state. And just by comparison, just because people are like, okay, well, it's 436 terawatt hours. Canada, where my colleague, Mr. Lusty, is at, it consumes annually about five times as much. So Texas has a pretty good volume of electricity that it consumes. And this was all over the news when we were out for roughly almost a week in 2021. So really in response, there's been a lot of discussion around energy security here in Texas, the resilience, the reliability. What does it mean to keep the lights on 24/7, 365? Our species is electrifying everything. That means we have to have power all the time and it has to be reliable. And John, I don't know what's going on in your backyard, but I would imagine in Canada and where you're seeing elsewhere in the world as well, a lot of need around reliability and this general thought of energy security that we have to have.
For sure, John. And, you know, I'd read about the legislation that was going through. And the first thing that I thought is that there's some similarities between the variability in the weather that Texas can experience, especially lately with the that crazy winter storm that you were referencing earlier, with some of what we go through up in Canada. And I live in Western Canada, which is even more variable, right? Close to the Rocky Mountains. So things can change here quite a bit. And it really underscores, I think, a balanced portfolio of energy production adds to the resilience, right? That directly influences energy security. In Texas, I think Texas has more renewables than any other state in the U.S. So to me, it would make sense after those big projects to develop the amount of wind and solar that they have to then have to rebalance. Because again, you can't, like any portfolio, like a financial portfolio, you can't be overinvested in any one asset, right? You've got to have a mix. And we do the same thing here in Canada because our variability up here is more temperature driven. Yours can be temperatures, right? Because that's getting more dynamic, as we talked about. You've also got activity coming up from the Gulf. So at the end of the day, to your point, as we electrify everything, we do need to make sure we've got that consistent supply. And there's a lot that goes into it, in addition to just renewables, right? So I think having that broad focus is absolutely the thing to do.
So John and John, you mentioned energy security. Can you provide us some insights on what strategies you're hearing from various geographies, various regions on how they're ensuring their energy security in the future?
Great question, Brendan. Thank you for that question. As we are seeing in Texas, more regions are looking to diversify their energy sources. In addition to the bill that we were just talking about in Texas, which kind of focused on renewables, there's additional bills that are focusing on fossil-based power or dispatchable power. Now, I don't think we'll see a slowdown in renewables, but we're certainly going to see an uptick in things like battery chemistry research and development. And that will go hand in glove with utility scale battery backup power with renewables. So renewables aren't necessarily going to slow down, but they are going to have to be more reliable and more resilient in the face of these black swan events, if you will, that occur. But of course, we're, I think, seeing black swan events that are coming a little more often than they have in the past. And then we're seeing more discussion around this baseload, around this dispatchable power, but there's some other cool developments that are coming online. We'll talk about that in a minute. But Mr. Lusty, your thoughts around what you're seeing on energy security and, let's say, the diversification of power.
In Canada, we start off with a fairly high level of energy security because we produce a lot of oil and gas. We do a lot more nuclear and hydroelectric power in Canada than we do oil and gas. But we have abundant generation capacity coming from all of those formats. But the challenge is being able to balance a stable supply of energy while continuing to move towards your decarbonization goals, right? Because energy security means many things. In the oil and gas sector, for example, the amount of work going on to progress towards our net zero targets at 2050 and hitting the targets 2030 have triggered a lot of really interesting project work in the carbon capture and sequestration space, right? And then improving the processing of the oil and gas and improving electrification where it makes sense within that space. And that's predominantly happening in the West because that's where the resources are, right? If we look on the eastern half of the country, got an awful lot of optimization of the current hydroelectric generating capacity in predominantly in Quebec, but also in Ontario. On the Ontario side, we've got a lot of work going on in the nuclear space in terms of how do we expand that? Because again, if we're looking to meet that energy intensity that we talked about a minute ago, there's a lot of advantages to being able to produce stable electricity through nuclear generation. And Canada is fortunate to have the second largest uranium deposits in the world. So we again have that benefit of being relatively resource rich. The other thing that I think about too, and we talked about it in the previous question, is again, balancing their portfolio. Like about 30% of the energy that we produce, we consume internally, but about 70% goes into the US. But being a market-driven economy, we're also subject to what's happening in the world, right? Prices go up and down everywhere. Thankfully, not so much over here as we've seen, say, in Europe because of some of the things that were going on. But that tends to shield our consumers and our businesses from some of that volatility, right? And I think the U.S. was largely in the same space.
You know, as you're talking, you mentioned nuclear. I'm real excited about some of the headlines we've seen around nuclear fuel developments and then, you know, small modular reactors, pebble reactors. Some really cool headlines there.
No, it's exciting stuff. And, you know, we haven't really talked about it as well, but in addition to making those physical assets more viable, regardless of how we're generating that energy for our society, we see big improvements happening in the use of the digital twin of those assets, right? So that we've got digital technology improving the resilience and the indirectly the energy security, right? Such that when we have an operational issue with an asset or we're looking to optimize that asset, that the knowledge workers across those energy generation sources, whether it's renewable or fossil or nuclear or whatever, have fast access to the knowledge they need to make good decisions consistently. Over time, that's going to add to energy security around the world.
Brandon, you started off this conversation earlier asking me about Texas. Well, right in our own backyard here, Mr. Lusty, in the Ship Channel area, Dow has been talking to X Energy, one of the companies we're talking to, around small modular reactors. And what was exciting was on March 1st, again, on the heels of all this that has gone on, you know, in Texas with the freeze and everything, we're seeing where they're going to actually look to build a small modular reactor behind the meter. So that's real exciting. I mean, you're looking at these energy and chemicals and infrastructure firms, and they're looking at their power needs. And now, for the first time in my lifetime, we've got something to diversify that supply of energy that is truly revolutionary, which I think small modular reactors are. Now, I'm a bit of an optimist on this. I think we're going to see a nuclear renaissance over the next two or three decades across the globe because we're now looking at nuclear differently. Instead of these large, you know, these really big power plants, what if I can actually make them in a very small, let's say intrinsically or more intrinsically safe way where the fuel itself too is also been redesigned. And instead of these opportunities for, let's say, a runaway reaction, like we've seen, you know, you've seen the movies, you've seen the headlines, we've seen the news around Chernobyl and Fukushima and those others, Through My Island, things like that. But it's a different world now. And I think there's a different understanding and a different sense of opportunity around nuclear that we've never seen before. I personally am real excited that if we can bring nuclear on board, reduce the amount of, and again, using the word fossil, that we consume as a species. And by the way, hydrocarbons are important as far as plastics or materials or pharmaceuticals or agricultural products go and so forth. So why waste something like that for future generations. So if we can use that more effectively, great. And if that means small modular reactors have that benefit, how great is that, right? A better use of the resources at hand, diversification, and better energy security. For me, I'm really looking forward to this renaissance of nuclear that we're really on the cusp of.
Yeah, I think it's the obvious answer. Producing energy is always about managing constraints. And if we want to solve for the CO2 molecule, there is no more intense, more economical way to produce energy than nuclear fission, whether it's a larger plant, if that's what their market requires, or small modular reactors. You know, when we have activity virtually going coast to coast, or memorandums of intent signed in Canada. We've had a very heavy nuclear power market in Ontario. I think Ontario, 70% of their power generated, I believe, is from nuclear fission. We've been doing that for over 70 years, and the amount of spent fuel rods wouldn't fill a hockey arena. So when you compare that to other energy sources with no CO2, and regardless of what the movie industry would tell us, as much as we love that, the safety record in the nuclear industry is impeccable on a day-to-day basis, right? So it's a fantastic industry if we want to solve for CO2. But I think one of the things that's been illustrative in the conversation that we're just having, we're talking about all these different ways that we're generating energy. They all have advantages and disadvantages. Different regions, depending on where you live, have different requirements in terms of crazy things the weather does, especially out here where I live, and I guess where you live too sometimes, John. But one of the big conclusions is it's not going to be easy. It's going to take a lot of different forms of energy. There isn't a simple answer. It's a tremendously smart industry. If there was a simple answer out there, we'd have found it by now. So I think there are the solutions will be varied, and I think it's going to take a little bit longer than some people think to get there, but I do think we're going to get there.
You made the observation that you couldn't put the amount of spent fuel rods in a hockey rink. Can you give me the conversion factor of hockey rink to football field? Because I'm from Texas.
Well, I don't know. I think they're about the same, but the hot dogs are better where you come from.
Oh, right? So,
yeah.
Yeah, but we don't have poutine like you do up there in Canada, which I got used to when I worked up there for 5 years. So, Brendan, I think what we're seeing is, yes, legislation is probably catching up with the needs to diversify energy. I don't see it as terribly detrimental really anywhere. I just think that we're going to have to face facts that renewables, especially during black swan events like we've seen, need something complementary, such as battery storage, which quite frankly discharges quite rapidly. So that may not necessarily be the answer for black swan events. So you certainly need dispatchable power as backups, and nuclear is going to be a big part of that. So I'm real excited about the future. I think the next 10 years are going to see innovations that we can't even guess at right now. So I'm real excited that we're in a position as a company to support the R&D needs of the energy industry.
And across all the different flavors of that energy, John, regardless of where you're talking about, how we're generating that energy, the digital twin and the evolutions in technology at Siemens and companies like us are going to be really exciting. You and I talk all the time in terms of how ChatGPT is going to help users of or operators of these facilities better interrogate their data to come up with answers quickly, right? So everything that is being done around design and simulation and enterprise data management and IoT and physics-driven simulation and all of the various digital developments that we're seeing in the industry, they're all going to be brought to bear too. And it's that it's combining those digital capabilities with the physical assets and in a way such that we can consistently make good decisions is going to allow us to advance on that front. And like I said, I think we're going to get there. There's going to be movement in terms of the road that we take, right? And there's going to be lots of interesting discussions in terms of how to get there. But there's never been a more interesting time to work in the energy industry around the world.
Well, John Nixon and John Lusty, thank you so much for joining us today. And thank you to all of our listeners for tuning in to the Siemens Digital Industry Software Energy Podcast. Stay tuned for another great episode coming really soon.